2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now. Game on, weeknights from 6.
On 2FM.
And you're very welcome to the programme. It is Tuesday, April 12th. This is Game On. Coming up today, the girls in green are underway in Sweden in what is a key World Cup qualifier, just over half an hour gone. The game there is scoreless. We'll bring you fully up to speed on that shortly. We're also going to hear from Mark Langdon on a big Champions League night ahead as Chelsea have a mountain to climb in Madrid.
We need nothing else than a fantastic script if we want to be able to overcome this. It's the task is incredibly high and the challenge is incredibly high given the circumstances of first leg and where we play and against whom we play and at what stage we play this kind of match.
In rugby, we'll hear from Graham Rowan, Rowntree, on his appointment as next Munster head coach. And in racing, we'll be speaking to Aintree Grand National winning jockey Sam Whaley-Cohen.
Noble Yates in front by a length over any second now. It's Noble Yates under Sam Whaley-Cohen. A fairy tale end to his career. Noble Yates has won the National, has beaten any second now.
Game on 2FM.
If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. I've read that name 100 times and probably never said it before, Damien. Graham Rowntree, Rowntree.
This was like me with Eric Ten Hag last night on the programme. I can say it perfectly fine until it's on a piece of paper in front of me and then I'm completely snookered.
I know. How many times have I heard it? Rowntree. Anyway, yeah. I won't forget that one again.
Well, there we go. It's all right. I'm sure he's not listening. If you are Graham, I apologise on behalf of Ruby.
I doubt very much he's listening.
You never know. He's very integrated into Irish life.
I'm sure he is, but I'd say he's busy trying to find a backroom team.
Well, we'll chat about that later on in the programme. You see, maybe they just all have it done and he just hasn't. He's like a good magician. The trick has been completed. He just hasn't unveiled to you yet how it's going to be done. So we'll hear from the man himself. I think the cat's been out of the bag for a while down around Limerick, and obviously they felt the need to announce it yesterday, and he was rolled out for media today. I often think it's a great diversionary tactic. You've got a massive match against Exeter at the weekend. You've just played the first leg. There's a little bit of pressure on. You roll out the fella who's going to be your head coach, and wham bam, thank you ma'am, your pre-match press conference is completely dominated by the new sheriff in town rather than what's coming to Thomond Park at the weekend.
Tactics, all tactics, Damien. You know, you got to know when to play them and play them right if you can. But I'm not sure it's really going to bother Exeter, who will be probably thinking, how are we only 5 points in front?
Yeah, well, we've all of that to look forward to later on in the programme. We are deeply engrossed in the game between Sweden and the Republic of Ireland. This World Cup qualifier, 33 minutes of the game played. Rebecca Cray, formerly of Shelburne, Rahini United, I better mention Bohemians as well, or I'll get given out from some quarters, is with us in studio. Before we talk about the game, this just to put this into context, we are playing one of the best teams in the world, a team that are favourites for the European Championships and the World Cup before even qualifying for it. We're a long way down the world rankings. It's important to have realistic expectations on Irish shoulders, but 35 minutes played, the game is scoreless, and Ireland are playing the game plan to a T.
Most definitely, yeah. What, Sweden are second in the world at the minute, ourselves are 30th, and I think, you know, Ireland have held their own. They've obviously got a good game plan, well organised, and they're weathering the storm so far. It has been all Sweden, as we well expected. I know Katie got down the left there early on and across into the box, found D, but or Denise O'Sullivan, sorry, and just went wide. But yeah, look, I think Vera and the backroom staff would be happy enough going in, hopefully at half time with a nil all draw, regroup at half time, and look, there's been a right old battle in there in centre mid between Seager, Bennison, Little John and O'Sullivan. So yeah, and obviously Aslani off the bar as well, just before we came on. But look, hopefully we get in, regroup and go out and see how the second half goes.
Rebecca, Vera has set them up well, 5 across the back, 4 in front of that, and they're having to work incredibly hard to keep their shape, aren't they?
Definitely, yeah. Like I'd say their GPS devices may explode by the end of the game. You know, the work rate has been intense. And obviously it's fantastic to see Chloe Mustaki come in at left full there for her first competitive start. And I think she's held her own as well down there. They were looking to exploit that side throughout the first half. But yeah, looking really well organised. And look, hopefully we can hold out.
So we look at it like we touched upon this on the programme last night, that ultimately Ireland's qualification hopes are going to be determined. The game away to Georgia towards the tail end of June, the game at home to Finland at the start of September. Finland are currently 6-0 up against Georgia, so as it stands would take them 2 points above us in the table. We'd have a game in hand.
Yep.
So we're still looking at, let's be very honest, and it's not defeatist. If we got out of here with a draw tonight and then regroup and refocus on two eminently winnable games, like this group, they are well in contention to finish second and get a playoff here.
Definitely, like you're running out there with a draw if you do get it today. And you've seen, obviously, Finland, Slovakia was 1-1 there a few weeks ago. But yeah, look, as you said, we have a game in hand. Goal difference is still very much in our favour as well. So hopefully, look, we can just see this one out, take it game by game and see how it goes, and then later in the year.
We were chatting beforehand, like, you look at Sweden, 6 wins from 6 games in advance of tonight, 26 goals scored, 1 goal conceded. Yeah. Like, you know, we were chatting that, you know, you are watching the best in the world. This is a team to savour.
Definitely. Yeah. They're top class and they're favourites for the Euros this summer. So it's going to be no mean feat in this game if we come out with a draw. It's probably the best we can hope for at the minute. If we get a lucky break, I know Heather Payne is up there at a really hard slog now she's going to have today, and she's going to have to be patient. But look, you never know what could happen. We could get a nice little break and maybe later on here or in the second half, and be fantastic.
Sweden, of course, I'm watching it here as well, Rebecca. I've played it down the right channel, but they're playing it down the channels the whole time and looking to cross it in on top of Courtney Brosnan. They have plenty of height up front as well, don't they?
Yeah, they have a huge kind of height advantage in there. You can see they're trying to play in between the lines every time, and down the channels, as you said, we are, you know, kind of containing them, I suppose. When they do get in behind, you know, we are giving away little corners or throw-ins, things like that. I don't know if it's going in their favour with the lineswoman and the referee. I can see Katie there having her say, but yeah, they are. They're getting in behind us there. But look, hopefully we just hold our concentration.
What would it mean for the national side to qualify for a major tournament, just to put it into context? Because, you know, people talk about, like, in Denise O'Sullivan, not only do we have arguably the greatest player Ireland has ever produced, we've got one of the best players in the world. Katie McCabe is not far off that category as well. That there's this generation, it just has this feeling that this group of players have the capacity and the ability to break that glass ceiling, and the impact of that would be phenomenal.
Yeah. I think it's probably the most exciting squad we've had in a number of years. You've got a right mix of youth and experience in there now. As you said, Denise is next level. There's no denying that. She's top class, as you say, Katie. And there's a good few. Like, you look at the likes of Niamh Fahy, Louise Quinn, who've been around the squad, Diane Caldwell, for a long time now. And I know it would mean more than anything for the likes of them to get us to a major tournament. It would do amazing things for our domestic league as well. Mm. You know, and I know there'd be a right buzz around the country if we did.
Because we were just talking about it beforehand, and we touched upon this, Ruby and I, last night, that, you know, I was in Musgrave Park on Sunday, and, like, members of the women's rugby squad would have been an hour on the touchline taking selfies if they were allowed to be. And it's the exact same with this squad, that there is such a love and an affinity and a connection that it would be, like, it would just mean so much. And I know we often pay lip service to role models and the influence on kids, but, like, you look at a generation where all of these players, pretty much, aside from the ones that have declared for Ireland, they've all come through the system here. For the vast majority of them have played Women's National League or its equivalent at some stage before then moving on to progress their careers somewhere else. That there is a pathway that exists here which doesn't exist with the men.
Yeah, like the grassroots level that's been happening, you know, and developing over the course of the last few years has been fantastic. And the majority of these girls would have started in the Irish schools teams right the way through and into the Women's National League. And obviously having that visibility and accessibility that fans and young kids have now, you know, at the games. The girls, you can see they're fantastic at the end of games. They'll stay out, rain, hail, snow, sun, whatever it may be, and they will put effort into the fans, and they're very grateful to have those numbers out at games, you know. So listen, it would be unbelievable to get to a major tournament, and I really, really hope that they do.
So just before, you're going to keep an eye on this for us over the course of the programme, but we've got, 4.5 minutes to half-time. Ireland have just had a very good opportunity from Katie McCabe, which was saved, relatively comfortably in the end by the Swedish goalkeeper. But if they can get to half-time scoreless, regroup, refresh the batteries a little bit and play on for the second half. But we were joking about it beforehand that, you know, defending is so much more physically and psychologically demanding that, you know, it's a massive, and it's, again, it's not being defeatist, it's being realistic. It's a massive task to shut this side out for, 4 minutes plus whatever's to come in the second half.
Yeah, it's so hard. Like, off the ball work is really more important, if it is more important, you know, than when you have got the ball. And it's going to take the height, the concentration to get through. Now, obviously, we do have a good few bodies on the bench to come on, fresh legs, Amber Barrett, Leanne Kiernan, who are great runners as well, you know. So we have got options there to bring on fresh legs, who will be very much up to the task as well. So, look, hopefully just see out this first half and come back out second half, recharged and regrouped.
Rebecca, when you look at this stadium in Gothenburg, there's a huge crowd at it, and this game is live on RT2 even. When you look at the crowd that's there, this Swedish team is obviously very, very popular in its own nation. I know that the women's team have been getting great teams in Tala. Would you love to see these girls, women, sorry, attract a crowd like this at the Aviva or in a bigger stadium? Do you think the sport can get to there?
I think so. I think, you know, we have to have that as an option, and you have to, you know, set that as a bar that we need to reach. You look at the Barcelona Real Madrid game there a few weeks ago, 96,000. Yeah. Like, that's unbelievable. You don't hear that a lot in men's games, you know. So look, I would love to see it happen. I think later in this year, if it was a case of us, you know, getting to a playoff stage, if we did do that, it'd be amazing.
Can I ask you on that? And I'm often torn on this, and I draw the parallel, say, okay, you know, Bohemians last year in Europe, they couldn't play their European matches in Daly Mount. They can just about play their League of Ireland matches in Daly Mount. And, you know, the option was, well, do you go to Tala and play in Tala, or do you go to the Aviva and play in the Aviva? And okay, it worked out well for them that they adapted well to the Aviva and had a great run of performances. But I don't know your view on this, Ruby, that if you've built Tala into what Tala is, do you then sacrifice that home advantage in order to have the experience of playing in a bigger stadium, unless it's like a, you know, a marquee friendly or something?
I don't know, Rebecca, your opinion might be different than mine, but I think if you got this Irish team in the Aviva and got it to almost capacity and had them all shouting for Ireland,
imagine. Yeah.
I'd say, oh, yes!
What?
Rebecca's watching on a screen in front of us, so we've ruined it for you. Here you go.
I'm going to fall off the chair.
You can hear from, it's just, once there's no profanity
you
when you fall, we're fine.
Not saying
so, the Republic of Ireland, with 43 minutes played, have taken the lead. True. Captain Fantastic.
There she is.
Did you get an opportunity to see it there, Nettie? You can talk us through it.
Oh, my gosh. Don't know what to say. I didn't expect that, but look, that's just showing what Katie can do. She's got that in the locker. You can see her at Arsenal week in, week out, scoring goals similar to that. And as I said, look, opportunities are going to come, and look, we're taking them this time round. That is quality.
Free kick just inside our own half, played wide, ball played into the box. Sweden failed to fully clear their lines. Denise O'Sullivan taking possession, played it back to Katie McCabe, who I think had taken the original free kick, shot from just outside the box, which probably took a slight nip off a defender.
Not that we really care.
Being a bit kind there now.
There we go.
Sorry, took. It may have taken a slight deflection.
It was only slight.
Slight, yeah.
Oh, okay. It was, come here, the ball was going to end up in the same parish, just about.
Listen,
so anyway,
we'll
the ball
it.
Is in the back of the net.
We'll take it.
And the Republic of Ireland, now, here's the question for you.
Seven at the back now.
That's what I was going to say to you.
The bus.
Okay, we said beforehand, we'd have taken the arm off you for a draw. We now lead with 30 seconds of the first half left. How does the game plan change in the first half? Well, or at halftime, I should say.
I think you're parking the bus, aren't you? Like, it's, I know, look, you can say you don't want to be too negative, but you never expect a result like this, or you know, not a result yet, but we're still attacking.
That's only the second goal they've conceded in qualifying.
That
puts it into context. The other goal was against Finland, who are the second seeds.
Yeah.
So
okay. I'm struggling for words here, to be honest.
Well, that's grand. Well,
I'll
tell you
that,
what, now you've got half time to enjoy to savour it. So, yeah. For people that are watching at home, the pictures that we have are a Swedish match director who is showing us repeated replays now of the ball being whipped into the box. And I think the question is, was there an offside along the way? And quite frankly, we don't care.
It doesn't matter, does it?
We don't care because the goal has been given.
Blow it up, ref.
We've 30 seconds of
ask him. Ask him to ever hear a Thierry Henry.
Do you know, here's one for you. What nationality was the referee the night Thierry Henry handled the ball?
I hope he was Swedish.
Yeah, he was Swedish, Martin Hansen.
There you go.
Right, so, come here. We're not there yet, but that's not a bad start. So just to confirm, the other game in the group, Finland beating Georgia by 6-0. So the table, as it stands, is Sweden 18 points from 7 games. The Republic of Ireland, if we can hold out for a win here, would be 10 points from 5 games, level on points with Finland, but Ireland would have a game in hand on the finish. So we will see how that plays out. Ruby, we've an awful lot else to look forward to from a soccer perspective tonight, so we've the second half of that game to come. Obviously Real Madrid against Chelsea, Real Madrid 3-1 up on aggregate. We're going to chat to Mark Langdon about this later on in the programme. Bayern Munich Villarreal is the second game tonight. Villarreal a goal to the good up. Thomas Tuchel, like, you know, a startling level of honesty from a manager in a pre-match press conference, effectively saying we've not got a hope unless we can play the greatest game of football we've ever played.
Yeah, but Charlene, you have to have a ticket to win the lotto, and they still have the ticket. Look, they got 6 at the weekend against Southampton. Perhaps I should have saved a few of those tonight for the Bernabeu, but look, you have a ticket, you have a chance. It's going to be hard, but who knows?
Okay, we've a lot more still to come in the programme, so we will hear from Graeme Rowntree, who was on media duty today ahead of Munster's game against Exeter at the weekend. We're going to chat Champions League soccer towards the tail end of the programme. It is gone half-time in that game between the Republic of Ireland and Sweden. Ireland leading by a goal to nil, courtesy of that Katie McCabe goal with a very, very minor deflection on the way. So we'll keep an eye on that. And we are going to be joined by the Grand National winning jockey, Sam Whaley Cone, in 2 minutes' time.
RTE 2FM.
Game on
2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now.
Game on.
Racing.
Welcome back to Game On. So last Saturday afternoon at about 5:30, Noble Yates won the Randocks Grand National for trainer Emmett Mullins and rider Sam Whaley-Cone, who has kindly taken time to take a call from us this evening. Sam, congratulations. I thought I had nailed the art of how to retire, but you didn't half usurp that.
Thanks, hi Ruby. Yeah, it was a good day, wasn't it?
It was an incredible day. I mean, Sam, to announce that you were going to bring down the curtain on your riding career prior to the Grand National and then go out and win it was a fairy tale.
It was you know, even now, like, on reflection, it just feels a bit too ridiculous. I went for a walk with my wife yesterday evening. I was like, are we going to wake up from this? Like, is it really real? Because you know, it feels too implausible. But no, it's so far not woken up, so seems like it's true.
And you won't wake up either, trust me, it is true. But Sam, look, everybody has a plan, has a theory, has a notion going out in the Grand National, what they would like to do. But surely when you crossed the Melling Road, 39th of the 40 runners, that was not the plan.
That was not the plan. I was going across that road going, well, this is a sad way to finish. I'm going to trace round behind everyone and pull up. So that was definitely not the plan. Like, Noble Yates was totally taken off his feet, didn't get into it. And so you know horses much better than me, but I just thought, well, I need to fill him full of confidence and just see if he can tag onto the back of these guys. And if he carries me, I'll just let him keep going forward. And otherwise it's going to be a long old way round, kicking him the whole way. So, you know, wasn't the plan.
No, definitely not. But the Grand National is a strange race. And as you started to make your way through the race and you were passing horses and horses were falling, when did you start to think, hey, up, I'm getting into a half all right position here?
Do you know, it wasn't so much that. It was just when he was confident, he carried me forward, and then I could half ride a race. So every time he sort of picked up the bit, I was just sort of keen to let him go forward into the space, because I was nervous if he had a knock or lost his confidence again, he'd give the ground back away. So I was always happy just to let him go forward for me wherever I could. And well, you know what it's like at any fence, the dream can end. So it was more just trying to contain him and learn the lessons of previously going too early, going too late, generally making a mess of it to sort of try and get him there with a chance, you know, at the last minute.
You write that seldom, that you remember those things. The rest of us kind of did it so often that we got over it much quicker, making a mess of it. But I do also know that when you cross back over the Madding Road on the second circuit with only two left to jump, you do then think you've a chance of winning the Grand National. I have experienced that. When you faced up to the second last, did your heart start to race? Did you start to think, my God, this is going to happen?
Well, I just got a really lucky line off the bend. The horses in front of me were just holding me in, so I just took a pull and got to the inside line, which is kind of where I wanted to be. And then as we got off the bend, the sort of horses on the outside opened up. The horse on the inside held its line, so there was just this incredible gap. And Noble Yates kept going into the gaps whenever they appeared. So it just literally invited him in. And Emma said to me, look, I think he'll stay, but, you know, just don't do too much too early. So thinking, he's going to be angry with me if I've gone too early here. But I was more trying to keep look after him and not get too excited, because, you know, at the last fence, you could go all out and ask too much. So it was kind of keep him contained. And one of the things I learned at Cheltenham, actually, was that he had a turn of foot. I'd watched... when Patrick Mullins had won on him in his maiden hurdle back in the day, that his acceleration is incredible. He looks like he's not going anywhere, and then suddenly he can shoot off. And he did a bit the same for me at the festival, where I was struggling, and then suddenly he went on when I asked him. So I sort of thought when I ask him, he's going to find. And yeah, he did.
He found plenty. Sammy, you've had an amazing career, primarily in the colours of your dad, Roberts. But look, he bought this horse with the Grand National as a plan. I know you rode him in Cheltenham, but how often have you actually sat on Noble Yates?
Well, that was just the third time, to be honest. We came over to Emmett's before the festival and had a sit on him. And, you know, nice horse. Get to know him a bit. He's a real character, so that was valuable. And then I at the festival, and then I sat on him at Aintree.
Familiarity certainly didn't breed contempt in that relationship. But look, you have had a remarkable career, and you are a genuine amateur, as we were talking about on the show last night. Not behind your back, it was all good, trust me. But you had some wonderful days, obviously long run 2010 or 2011 as it was, King George, 2011 yeah. Gold Cup. You must have pretty much achieved everything you could have ever have hoped for as a jockey.
You know, to be honest, the ambitions were very different when I got into riding. You know, it was really maybe one day I could have a ride at the Cheltenham Festival, maybe one day I could have a ride at Aintree. You know, it would have been far too, you know, an absurd ambition to ride in the Cheltenham Festival multiple times or ride at Aintree multiple times. So it's not just exceeded, it's massively surpassed even having a long, you know, having a long career, having fun and turning up on big days. It's you know, you couldn't set out with that ambition with any all honesty.
But Sam, sorry, I'm going to bow to Ruby. He's obviously the horse aficionado. I'm the one who's going to ask the crude questions about money and pastimes and everything else. Like, it's been billed as, like, you are like the last of the ultimate amateurs. Like, there is a film in this about a guy who's a really successful businessman who, you just do this for the ultimate love of the sport.
Yeah, look, I love horses. I love the sport. You know, nothing is better than me than going out on the back of the horse on Sunday after the race. The peace, the moment of peace that I had was out on the back of the horse. It's a sort of almost a meditation for me is to get away from the noise and go for a ride. So, you know, nothing could be better. And I've been lucky to be able to do it as an amateur and enjoy it as a passion.
But so when people talk about the pressure of being on the National or the pressure towards the latter stages of the race at Aintree at the weekend, does that pale into the insignificance of the pressure that comes in the business world and having staff working for you and everything else that I presume dominates your mind for the most part Monday to Friday?
No, I think they're different. I mean, Aintree is a different pressure experience, but, you know, riding horses like Long Run and the Gold Cup, when they're favourite, everyone's got their opinion, everyone's building it up. You know, you go there with a lot of expectation and you want to deliver for the horse, you want to deliver for, you know, for the owners, you want to deliver for yourself, and you know if it goes wrong, there'll be plenty of people to remind you. So there is huge pressure on those days. You know, I guess in the business world, it's responsibility. You know, we run a healthcare business, it's actually got some practices in Ireland, in Cork and Dublin, and during COVID, you know, you're looking after people, you're looking after people's livings, how they put food on the table for their families. So that's real responsibility, which, you know, in a way helps keep the racing in perspective, which as an amateur is, you know, if it goes wrong, you've let yourself down, but you haven't done any real damage to the world. If you really get things wrong in the healthcare world or in business, you might do some real damage.
So what was the tipping point then at the age of 39 to decide it's now time to step away from the great love of amateur racing? And I'm trying to think, like, how do you replace the buzz that racing has given you as, you know, the ultimate of sideline interests or the ultimate of sideline hobbies?
Yeah, look, I think you know, in racing, the outcome, the winning, you can't be in racing just to ride winners, because you don't ride enough of them relative to the number of days that don't go to plan, or certainly I don't. So you've got to love the process. You've got to love finding the horse, building relationship with the horses, plotting your way to the race. And I've always felt like if you don't want to do every day, it doesn't mean you have to love every day. Obviously, there are days you don't enjoy, but if you don't want to do every day, then you're in trouble. And I suppose over the last year, there were days when I was like, actually, I don't want to travel 2 or 3 hours to ride one horse that I know's got no chance. And that, to me, started to trigger the question of, well, maybe the time is coming to an end, because racing, like all sports, you're either in or you're out. You can't just pick things and go, I'll do this one, it's a nice one, that one's not a nice one. You're either doing it or you're not doing it. And, you know, as soon as you decide you're not doing it, then that's a good moment to stop.
Well, Sam, according to the Racing Post, I was looking it up earlier on the track in the last 5 years, you've had 118 rides and 18 winners, which is a 15% strike rate, which most professionals would be quite happy to have. But the one thing that blew me away on Saturday afternoon was when you pulled up after the Grand National, 4 miles, 2 furlongs, you gave the horse a pat, you turned and Alice Plunkett stuck a microphone under your mouth. There wasn't a blowout of you. How did you maintain your fitness level the way you have?
Look, I think that's kind, but I think honestly, for me, the outcome of the race I can't control, but I can turn up at the race fit. I can turn up at the race knowing my horse. I can turn up at the race with a plan, and you know that's the pressure I put on myself is to turn up there knowing that I can do it justice. And so, you know, even before the Grand National, you know, it's making sure you're going there with a plan and that you're fit. Because that is letting yourself down if you turn up there with no clue and taking things for granted or taking advantage. So, yeah, that's the bit that people don't always see is there's a lot of work away from the horses and a lot of work away from the big days. But that's that's the bit that was important to me, was to be able to turn up and give the horses the chances that they deserved.
And Sam, of course, it was a massive family occasion. Your dad did own them, your mum was there, your wife Annabelle, all of your own three kids, I think the three of them were there. Anyway, I definitely saw two on the podium. But obviously Thomas, your brother, wasn't there. You always have his initials on your saddle. But still, it must have been a massively proud moment for ye as a family.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's just great. And everybody loves it. I mean, on Sunday when we went for a ride, you know, I mean, we're just a family. So we went for a ride with my kids, my brother, his kids, my dad, and everyone just enjoys it. You know, one of the things that I forgot to mention, I've probably been in trouble for it, but my sister made the brow band. It's like a brown and orange brown band that the Noble Yates is wearing. She made it.
And I was wondering where Emmett Mullins got that. I was thinking that was way too fancy for him.
Yeah, my sister made it. And so, you know, everyone loves it. Everyone gets excited. And they're real family days.
Annabelle, happy you're finished?
I'm not sure she is, actually. I think she thinks I'm going to be a pain in the neck at home, but she's glad I'm in one piece.
I'm sure she is, and I'm sure everybody else is. Sam, it was an incredible achievement. You've had an outstanding career. We wish you the best with Portman Dental Care now that it has all your attention, and thanks a million for taking our call.
Oh, that's kind. Thanks. Thanks so much, Ruby.
Sam Whaley-Conner. Ruby, can I ask you questions you've been asked 1,000 times, but I've never asked you them, so I'll ask you for the first time. Papillon, that win, to do that for your dad, presumably, if there was to be one race you could relive, is that the one that you'd pick?
If I could have 2 days of my sporting life back, it would be the day Papillon won and the day after. I would have those 2 days back. If I could just relive 2 days of my sporting life. There are other days in your life, personal days or whatever, but if I could have 2 days of my sporting life, it would be those 2 days.
And is that just the exhilaration it brought you, what it meant to you and to everybody in the family, or is it just simply a case that once you've crossed the line and you've won, I would imagine it's so frenetic around you that can you fully savour it?
I did. That's why I wanted back again. It was the most incredible 2 days from getting up that morning until we went to bed the following night. But it was just a once in a lifetime experience that I would gladly repeat.
And you don't shy away from all that you achieved, but you are a modest man and I don't think you like the accolades fully. You're smirking at me on the Zoom chat that we have. But it's a very exclusive little group that you are a part of, and it is the ultimate achievement in the sport. Not even a sport, it's the ultimate achievement in what it is you've dedicated your life to become a Grand National winner. And there's very few people on the planet can understand how Sam's life changed at 5:30 Saturday evening.
No, they can't, but it was special for him to be there with all his family. I just happened to say his brother Thomas wasn't there. He died a number of years ago from bone cancer, and Sam is a huge donor and does a lot of work with bone cancer research, and he has always had Thomas's initials on his saddle. He will have been missing from that day for them, they love the sport. Robert Welty Cohen was chairman of Cheltenham Racecourse for many years. They are really decent people and they deserve every bit of success that they have.
Yeah, and fair play to them for taking a call. There's not an awful lot of people would have done that. So that's Sam Welty Cohen, who won the Grand National with Noble Yeates on Saturday. The Athletic are normally bang on the money when it comes to these things, are reporting within the past half an hour that Manchester United have reached an agreement in principle with Erik ten Hag to become their next permanent manager. Ajax, they say, are aware of the situation, still need to reach a deal with United. United also need to finalise details and documentation, so there's no written agreement or announcement in place until after Ajax play PSV in the Dutch Cup final next week, and seemingly he has to confirm his backroom staff in due course. Again, it's not earth-shattering.
Backroom staff for his new squad.
6-1, half a dozen the other. Come here. In the Grand... Actually, I'll get you to chip in on this. It's one of the biggest teams in the world, one of the biggest clubs in the world, but it is in complete disarray. How attractive a job is Manchester United, or is it just simply a case of to be the man who can go in and rebuild it from the shambles it currently is?
Yeah, I'd say it's the latter, to be honest with you. It's chaotic there, to say the least. As a Liverpool fan, I kind of wallowed in it for a while, but I'm kind of more pitiful now to see the demise that has happened. I think they thought at the start of Ronaldo signing back that he was going to save the club and this season, but it just hasn't happened that way. And I think they do need to do a complete clear overhaul. Out, let's just say, or overhaul.
But Ruby, that requires time, that requires patience, Man United fans. And again, I know we didn't even talk about it last night because it sounds like it's just a pile-on week on week, but will there be patience there? Will there be an understanding there that if this guy is to take them into, I was going to say into some level of obscurity in the next couple of years, but it can't get much worse than it's been relative to the expectation that Manchester United have?
It requires, what does it require? A clean out for a start. The attitude has to change, the commitment, the desire. I'm not in control of the financial strings, but it's going to cost so much money because they have too many overpaid, overvalued people that need to be shoved on and start with core values, at least wanting to be there and trying.
But the problem then, to develop it further, Rebecca, is you've got an ownership structure who, they're not there as an act of charity or an act of benevolence. They've taken serious money out of the club in recent years, as is their want, as is their right when they own the club. You don't get the sense that there's an ownership structure there that are remotely willing to say, OK, we've given you money to buy Ronaldo, which in a lot of ways was a vanity project, or we'd rather spend a fortune to have him here rather than have him at Man City.
Yeah.
That you don't I don't see a situation there where they're going to put money into redeveloping Old Trafford, which is seriously in need of work. Their training ground, by all accounts, is top notch, but like, there's no guarantee that you're going to have a checkbook waiting for you in July when the window opens.
Yeah, not at all. There's been nothing. I can't remember the last time I actually, you know, you'd hear from the owners or anything like that. And I can only revert back to, say, Liverpool. And you look at Klopp when he came in, the team he had to work with for that, you know, start that he had with us was tough, and it was a hard slog. And thankfully now, years on, you know, it's changed. But that's come from the owners down, you know, and they have to have that heart, I suppose.
Before we take a break, I'll ask you a question I asked Ruby and Alan Cawley last night. So Guardiola is going in 2023. Pep is going in 2024. Which is the bigger pair of shoes to fill?
Pep?
Guardiola's going to go next 23.
Okay.
Klopp is going 24. So they've both announced. Guardiola says, I'm leaving in 2023. Klopp says, I'm leaving in 2024. Who's harder to replace?
I think Klopp.
Yeah, I would say.
I'm looking at Pep, the squad he has to play with there. You know, people can kind of argue and say, right, he's an easy task. I know he hasn't, because the league is quite competitive, but I'd like to say Klopp. I think he's got so much out of the team and club for the period of time he's been there. You know, he'd be a huge void to fill.
So, if you were listening to us earlier, you would have heard news of this.
Connolly sends the ball in. O'Sullivan will retrieve. Fahy on the ground. Here's McCabe. She wants to shoot. McCabe, it was deflected. There's the goal. Katie McCabe with the goal. And Lisa mentioned about all the stats, about all the goals she scored.
Two shots on target is all she needs for a goal.
What an amazing scoreline this is in Gothenburg. The small Irish contingent are celebrating. But from the set piece, the ball played in. And Ireland lead against the number two side in the world.
So that was Katie McCabe's goal shortly before half-time. 52 minutes played, and Ireland are controlling this game as well as they can.
Yeah, most definitely. Game management is going to play a huge part here. You know, take your time, throw-ins, kick-outs, all that kind of stuff, and just be smart when you have the ball. Looks like we've done it so far. I expected us to sit back a bit more. We seem to be trying to get the ball forward as well in this half. But look, looking comfortable so far.
Okay, break to take. Rugby with Graeme Rowntree after this.
RTE 2FM.
Game on
2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new added benefits range is enriched with all your B vitamins, which are essential for your health and well-being. Available in store now.
Game on.
Rugby.
Welcome back to Game On. So earlier today, Graeme Rowntree was revealed as Munster's next head coach. And earlier on today, he spoke to the assembled media at a Munster press conference.
How good is it to have it all out in the public now and be able to talk about it?
Excellent. It was a thorough process. Now, all done now, we can crack on. Not that I was distracted by any means, but it was quite consuming. No, we crack on and crack on with Saturday's game in particular.
At what point, or has it already started, does the process of recruiting the team around you as well, the team of assistants, does that start? And how much of a say and how much of an influence will you have in that as well?
I'm already speaking to people, obviously. You know, throughout the process, I've had to have had a plan to present, and we'll continue that without getting distracted.
And for the remainder of the season, is there any kind of arrangement with yourself and Johan about maybe, you know, you kind of stepping up, taking on maybe a couple of extra responsibilities to ease in, or are you very much deferring to Johan between now and the rest of the season?
He's the boss. Till the 30th of June, nothing changes on that coaching side of things. Nothing changes in that dynamic. He's the boss. I enjoy working for the man.
Just what is it about the club that struck such a chord with you, and what makes it different or unique compared to previous environments that you've worked in?
As I've said before, it's very much like the environment I grew up with in Leicester, a very down-to-earth, a humble group of people, very passionate, big supporter base, mad about their rugby, enjoy the crack, say no more.
You obviously feel ready to make the step up to head coach, but what gives you confidence that now is the right time to take that step in your coaching career?
I'm ready. Just feel I'm ready. I know the club feels the right time. I learned a lot. You get to a point in your career where you're comfortable about making the step up with what you've learned, the experiences you've been through. So that's why I threw my hat in the ring and Luckily, I got it.
Is there anything more you can tell us about the structure? Like, are you going to be looking for a director of rugby type figure, or will it be the same sort of coaching setup as you've had now at the moment?
I'd say the latter. Be a similar looking coaching setup, and that's for me to finalise in the near future. I've got some plans. I've spoke to certain people. But no, in answer to your question, it would be a similar looking coaching ticket.
So that's Graeme Rowntree chatting to Neil Tracy from RTE Online and other reporters earlier today. Ruby, just on this, like, obviously, you know, there's a relative cleaning of the decks with him coming in, and there's going to be a brand new look coaching team. By all accounts, he's massively invested in life in Limerick, massively invested in the club game around Limerick. The players are meant to speak very highly of him, but you would imagine simple consistency from one coaching staff to another coaching staff needs to almost be a prerequisite in all of this. If they were to get rid of the entire current coaching team, the amount of bedding in time that would be required would surely set Munster back as well.
Yeah, it probably would. But I think it's slightly ironic when you look at Eddie Jones walking into the English camp in 2015 and everybody he replaced, George Lancaster is now at Leinster, Andy Farrell is with Ireland, Mike Katz with Ireland, and Graeme Rowntree is in Munster.
And all doing a brilliant, or like a very impressive job along the way.
They are, yeah. And Eddie Jones didn't want any of them, and we took them all.
Yeah. But yeah, we'll see who gets to a World Cup semi-final next year. Says he disingenuously. We're going to look ahead to the Champions League evening. It's an hour gone in the game between Sweden and Ireland. Incidentally, Rebecca's keeping an eye on that for us and is going to chip in on Champions League chat along the way as well. But as mentioned, we've got Real Madrid 3-1 up at home to Chelsea tonight ahead of their quarterfinal second leg. Villarreal take a one goal lead to play Bayern Munich. Mark Langdon is with us. Hiya, Mark.
Hiya, good evening.
Good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us. As always, I suppose we'll start with Chelsea. Thomas Tuchel, remarkably open and honest in the press conference earlier that, you know, 3-1 down, the way we've performed last week, simply we're going to need the greatest performance of our careers. Do you give them any chance at all?
A small one. I mean, it's not over, is it? I mean, we've seen great comebacks in the Champions League before, and we'll see them again. I mean, it feels a bit simplistic to say this, but, you know, if Real Madrid can win 3-1 at Stamford Bridge, then why can't Chelsea win 3-1 at the Bernabeu? I don't think there's too much between the teams. I was surprised that Real Madrid won as comfortably as they did in London last week. You know, it was one of Real Madrid's best performances of the season. They're missing, I would say, their best centre-back, Militao, who really has been influential for them on the run this far in the Champions League. And also, you know, they're about to win La Liga, and he's been a key reason behind that. But Chelsea need to play a lot better than they did in that first game. I mean, Thomas Tuchel was furious, really, with the team's performance. And I expect them to do better, probably given themselves too much to do. But I don't think it's all over. And, the fact that the away goal rule is not in operation gives Chelsea more of a chance than they would have had last year, because, last year they would have needed to have scored 3 goals to have stood a chance. Now, a 2-0 victory, I wouldn't rule it out entirely, but they need to play, as Tuchel was saying, they need to play their best game of the season to stand a chance.
Mark, can it just be as simple as form? Last week they turned up in Stamford Bridge having been beaten 4-1 by Brentford the week before. This week they're going to the Bernabeu having trashed Southampton 6-0.
Yeah, it was an odd performance against Brentford. Maybe there was a bit of a hangover from that in that sort of performance in the first half against Real Madrid. People were making mistakes that we haven't seen make mistakes. You know, Mendy's been one of the best goalkeepers in the Premier League since he arrived. Gets caught with the ball outside of his area. Rudiger also not blameless in that goal. Somebody that, again, has been one of the real foundations really on which Chelsea have built their season. Christensen, a very good defender who might be off to Barcelona maybe in the summer, was just given a torrid time in that first half. Just not stuff that you expect. And then Chelsea, on the back of those performances, you feel like they're vulnerable against Southampton. They score the early goal and I think the whole mood changes. And that's what they need, I think, in this game in Madrid. They need to make a positive start lot to the match, because in the first half last week, they were just too timid. They allowed Real Madrid to pass through them. Vinicius and Benzema were linking up really well. And it wasn't the kind of performance that we've come to expect of Chelsea over the last year or so. You know, they're normally very good pressing without the ball, forcing the opposition into mistakes. And it just wasn't there. Maybe it was... just like I say, that hangover from what happened against Brentford, because even the best players, you know, if you get a thrashing like that, maybe you do just start to doubt yourself, a little bit, and it only takes you to be off a couple of percent in a game of that magnitude. And if everybody's sort of 5% below their best, you know, that adds up to a lot, against a team like Real Madrid. But they are capable, I think, of winning in Madrid and sort of at least making this tie really interesting tonight.
When we look at it, you know, you go back a couple of weeks, Real Madrid beaten 4-0 at home by Barcelona shows that the Bernabeu, okay, it's a fortress, but it's not one that can't be breached. So where is there the potential for an upper hand for Chelsea tonight tactically, do you think, if Tuchel goes about his business the right way?
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, he needs to be more aggressive in midfield, because if you allow Luka Modric and Toni Kroos kind of time and space like they did at Stamford Bridge, then even, you know, particularly Modric is in veteran status, he's still able to pull the strings if you don't put pressure on him. And so first of all, Chelsea need to be aggressive. They've got nothing to lose now. They've got to go for it. So I expect them to play sort of more on the front foot than we saw in that first game. Even Real Madrid, beaten heavily by Barcelona, don't forget they were also being outclassed by Paris Saint-Germain for a large part of that sort of tie. It was sort of the first leg and then the first 60 minutes of the second leg, and it was only really defensive mistakes that allowed them back into that game against Paris. So you can definitely create chances against them. They need to take their chances. You know, Kai Havertz is somebody that has been very efficient in front of goal. Lukaku, of course, hasn't travelled. He's unavailable to Thomas Tuchel. Someone like Timo Werner, you know, he whether it's starting or off the bench, I haven't seen the team yet, but Timo Werner is somebody that can cause problems with his deep runs. But so often he's wasteful in front of goal. Even when he was scoring against Southampton at the weekend, he still missed a number of chances. Probably could have had another, you know, couple on top of what he got in that game. So they need to be, like I say, really efficient in front of goal and put Modric and Kroos under pressure, because if you allow them two guys to dictate play, then you're asking for trouble. They can't get Benzema in the game if you kind of knock them off their rhythm. And that's what Chelsea need to do. Need to be much more aggressive than we saw in that first leg. And of course, that doesn't mean, flying into tackles in a silly kind of way. It's aggressive in your attitude as much as anything else. Play higher up the pitch, play at a quicker tempo, and see if you can get the first goal.
The other game is Bayern Munich versus Villarreal. Villarreal go there with a one-goal lead, and they missed a lot of chances last week. But will they be able to hold out at the Allianz Arena tonight?
Yeah, I'm not sure they will, Ruby. You're absolutely spot on. They missed an absolute bucket load of chances. Also had a very close VAR call that was just marginally offside. I feel like they maybe will live to regret not taking a bigger advantage to the Allianz, because Bayern Munich surely can't play as bad as they did in that first leg. It was nothing like the Bayern Munich we've come to expect. Usually at home, we saw, they were able to really thrash Salzburg in the last round and use that home advantage to their strength. So many attacking weapons that can just hurt any team. Villarreal had a brilliant run through to this stage, and even in the last round, they were able to go to Turin and knock out Juventus. In the first half of that game against Juventus, the goalkeeper played really well and Juve missed a couple of chances. I feel like they're probably going to need even more luck, really, to see it out against Bayern. I would expect Bayern to be able to overturn what is just that one-goal deficit. And, you know, Villarreal really should be looking at least a two-goal advantage given how many chances they had last week. And they didn't take them, and they'll probably be made to pay, I would have thought.
Bayern have been constantly changing formation, changing lineup this season. Is that what caught them out the other day?
Yeah, I mean, Julian Nagelsmann, I don't think has found the right kind of 11 yet. I think that is fair to say. And he's got so many players. Sometimes that can, of course, be it's not a disadvantage because any player would like to have, any manager would like to have so many great players, but he's struggling to fit them all into the team. Serge Gnabry, Kingsley Coman, Thomas Muller, you've got Robert Lewandowski, and even in midfield, Joshua Kimmich, Goretzka, Musiala as well. You can't play them all, and I think he has struggled to work out. Leroy Sané, somebody been very inconsistent ever since he arrived from Manchester City as well. Another one to try to fit into that attacking system. And he hasn't really, I don't think, yet found the right kind of formation nor the players that are going to play for him. So he keeps on tinkering. He keeps on trying to find the right formula. And that's probably the right approach. But nothing's really working at the moment. You can always rely on Thomas Muller and you can always rely on Robert Lewandowski. Some of those around him, Gnabry, Sane, Kingsley Coman, a little bit too inconsistent. I'm not sure myself really what two are the best to play in those wide positions. He's even tried to play Kingsley Coman as a wing-back as well, which again is a different formation to one that we expect them to play tonight. So he is a tinker man, Julian Nagelsmann, and even in matches, don't be surprised to see him, use two or three different formations in a game. He's always thinking, how to nullify the opposition. Maybe some of them Bayern players would prefer something, I suppose, a little bit more where they kind of know where they stand. But that's not going to be the case with Julian Nagelsmann. He's always going to, like I say, move players around, move formations around. I expect whatever team he picks tonight will probably be good enough to get the win and qualify for the semi-finals. But they'll need to improve if they do meet Liverpool in the semis.
Thanks a million, Mark Langdon. So it's Real Madrid and Bayern Munich to go through for Mark this evening. Damien.
Yeah, and obviously the two English teams, Liverpool, Man City, involved tomorrow night. Rebecca Cray is watching Sweden against the Republic of Ireland. We have a defibrillator on standby. Sweden still trailing Ireland by 1-0, 69 minutes played. This is no game of containment for Ireland in the second half. They are giving this a right rattle. Sweden have had a shot pushed onto the crossbar. It's the second time they've hit the woodwork. Should Ireland have had a penalty?
It was debatable, all right. There were small calls for it there. To me, she didn't look like she played the ball.
This maybe was Katie McCabe going through and surrounded by Swedish defenders.
Exactly. Bit of a body check. I don't know if it was elsewhere in the park. It might have been a free kick. But yeah, look, it wasn't given.
It was
given
a penalty.
So.
It was a definite
penalty. Yeah, see, there you go. There, Ruby's far more definite on these things than we are. So there's 70 minutes played. The game is live on RTE2 television. If you're out and about and you can't get near a television, this is worth watching because hopefully this is going to be one of the greatest results in Irish women's football history. Not to put the mockers on them. It's live on RTE Radio 1 Extra, and the easiest way to get that if you're out and about is the RTE Radio Player app. So there's coverage ongoing there. So
Alan Cawley's on that. It'll be fairly dramatic.
Alan Cawley and John Kenny, two more better qualified Buccali to generate a bit of excitement you're not going to get. So we'll leave it there. Rebecca, thank you so much for been with us. Ruby,
cheers,
it's been a pleasure as always. Talk to you soon.
Cheers, Damien. Talk to you shortly.
Thank you to Laura Lee Davies, who was our broadcast coordinator. The programme produced by Ronan Lawler. Tara's on the way. Good night.
RTE 2FM.
Game on
2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's newest chicken and turkey range is full of B vitamins, which play a vital role in maintaining good health and well-being. Available in store now.